You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the complex world of enterprise identity, securing legacy web apps at scale can be daunting. Strata Identity makes it simple. With Strata, you can effortlessly integrate non-standard apps with any identity service, like MFA or SSO, with zero coding and zero hassle. Designed by identity architects for identity architects, Strata works with every vendor, standard, and app architecture. This means your apps can now speak modern protocols and integrate seamlessly with your chosen identity services. From securing on-prem web apps to migrating away from outdated identity providers or consolidating them, Strata helps you keep your complex access policies as you modernize your identity infrastructure and get rid of technical debt. Join leading organizations like 3M, Dallas County, and CIBC in securing your apps with Strata. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your identity security priorities, and receive a complimentary pair of AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Connect today at strata.io/cyberwire.
Researchers look into a wave of attacks on financial institutions. Microsoft calls for a Geneva Convention for cyberspace. We take a look at phishing, and the RSA conference is underway. And we've got news from the Innovation Sandbox and venture capitalists. I'm Dave Bittner, not in Baltimore as usual, but in San Francisco, the city by the other bay, with your CyberWire summary for Tuesday, February 14th, 2017. We're, of course, in California, covering RSA 2017. We'll offer some observations from the conference a bit later, but for now, here's a quick review of the day's news. Researchers at Symantec and BAE have been looking into a wave of attacks on financial institutions. These attacks appear linked, they believe, to the Lazarus Group. The connection the researchers perceive is with the malware discovered in several of the watering hole attacks. The malware in question is Ratankba and is thought to bear significant similarities to attack tools used against banks by the Lazarus Group, a criminal organization believed by many to be linked to North Korea, and the hack Sony Pictures sustained in 2014. The wave of bank hacking came to light when Polish banks realized they were being compromised through a malware infection on Poland's financial sector regulatory body, the Polish Financial Supervision Authority. Its compromised website was serving as a watering hole. Polish media had initially suspected the campaign to originate with Russian security services. This is now being called into doubt. Attribution is notoriously difficult, the more so insofar as various intelligence and security services make use of criminal actors and even legitimate contractors to lend a degree of plausible deniability to their cyber offensive operations. Cyber Reason has been reporting their findings in this regard at RSA, noting an increased tendency of governments, Russia, the United States, and the United Arab Emirates are all mentioned, to use third parties to install and manage cyber espionage tools. Russia's use of criminal gangs was particularly evident in the hacks of the Ukrainian power grid. But the lesson here is that the old staple of covert and clandestine tradecraft, plausible deniability, has reappeared in cyberspace. It's just in a new key. Along those lines, Microsoft has called for a Geneva Convention in cyberspace. Such an agreement would go beyond the protection of non-combatants the original Geneva Convention sought to ensure. and would extend to the full range of issues as they might be negotiated for cyber conflict. Microsoft is interested in promoting general international norms of cyber conflict that would have a significant analogy to the international norms that currently govern armed conflict. Trevor Hawthorne is CTO at Wombat Security Technologies, and they recently released their 2017 State of the Fish report. We checked in with him for some highlights.
There were some trends that continued on that we've seen the last several years. There's also some good news. So we are actually starting to see some improvements when it comes to phishing. And while it's still an ongoing threat, just like a lot of things, just because you may tamp down one particular attack vector doesn't mean that you can completely take the pressure off and shift onto something else. It now is something that you have to kind of maintain. If you've reviewed the report, we send a lot of phishing emails, and so we have a pretty good idea of what makes people tick. Are people clicking more? Are they clicking less? And one of the trends that the report shows is we saw a 64% increase in organizations measuring end user risk from 2015 to 2016. And so what that basically says to us is that organizations are starting to actually do something. We're also starting to see more anecdotal evidence. If you go on to Twitter and you just search for the words phishing training, you're starting to see just a lot more chatter about people talking about their organizations conducting simulated phish. And this could be from everybody, from the administrators running programs all the way to end users saying, oh, I got caught. And they talk about the training. I've even seen a couple of my favorite parody accounts talk about phishing training. So we kind of feel like, okay, I think we're starting to hit this sort of critical mass here.
What about, technology versus training? I mean, how are we doing in terms of the users never actually, these phishing emails never actually getting to the users?
Sure. I've been doing information security primarily on the technical side of the house for, a little bit over 20 years now. Mm-hmm. And every single year that I've gone out to every conference and every talk that I've ever seen, there's always really cool technology. There's a lot of really cool things happening in like endpoint protection now. At the end of the day, if email filtering and spam filtering and that type of thing was an effective control here, we wouldn't be in business, and there wouldn't be this now fairly large industry. There wouldn't be a Gartner Magic Quadrant for user awareness if technology was 100% of the problem, which isn't to say that technology is useless. Obviously, I'm a technologist. I think everybody should have, the most advanced email filtering that their budgets will allow. But at the end of the day, the bad guys know that and they know how to get around it. And if I send a properly formatted, non-spammy email that uses either malware that's never been seen before or novel attack, or I use an attack that doesn't involve any malware, there's nothing to sandbox, there's new URL, it could be a, more of a confidence style attack. You have to rely on the end user to kind of close the gap between technology and where things fail.
That's Trevor Hawthorne from Wombat. Their State of the Fish report can be found on their website. In industry news, we're hearing that Microsoft has delayed issuing the patches expected for today. They should be out soon, but just not quite yet. Adobe has patched 13 flash vulnerabilities. There's also some M&A activity. Convergence Technology has acquired Deep Run. WiseKey has agreed to buy Quo Vadis, and Haylock will acquire Eclipse Security. In the startup world, Insights has secured a $13 million Series B funding round. RSA 2017 opened with its annual hunt for the most innovative startups in the sector. A talented field yielded some creative solutions to vexing security challenges. RSA's 2017 Innovation Sandbox held its competition and selected a winner yesterday afternoon, Unify ID. The 10 finalists all offered interesting and compelling presentations, especially, in our opinion, the runner-up Enveil, but Unify ID bore the prize away. A panel of venture capitalists offered a State of the Security Sector report. They think that while investors have become more selective, particularly in later stages of funding, the cyber sector remains attractive and there are many deals to be made. One of the VCs, Bob Ackerman from Allegis Capital, characterized the state of the sector like this, quote, "Markets initially run on hype and then move to a cycle in which they digest information," end quote. He sees the cyber sector as being currently on the cusp of that shift. If you're an entrepreneur pitching investors, here are some pieces of advice. Avoid buzzwords, know what differentiates you, and bring people who've been at the cutting edge of either the security industry or the intelligence community.
And I'm pleased to be joined once again by Emily Wilson. She's the Director of Analysis at Terbium Labs. You know, Emily, as we've spoken about before, you and I, the dark web kind of mirrors the real world in many ways. And there's a lot of expressions of nationalism online.
Yeah, it's true. You know, we've talked before about the different communities. You have your fraud community, you have your, you know, your drug community or what have you. But we also see kind of these lines being drawn, these national lines, right? And this manifests in a few different ways, you know, whether it's a, you know, a Russian-speaking forum or a Japanese drug site, you know. But one of the most interesting ways is when you see, you know, clearly expressed do's and don'ts that are set up to prevent certain people from being targeted. So, you know, there's a Russian carding site I'm thinking of in particular where, you know, you go to sign up or you go to log in and it says, you know, don't buy from Russians, don't sell to Russians, don't card Russians. Everyone else is fair game. And this isn't just Russia. It's Israel, too, right, is another example. But there are these lines where, you know, again, it's honor amongst thieves, right? We have a code. We don't attack our own people. Everyone else have fun, but we don't attack our own people.
And what happens if someone violates those rules? They just get booted out? It's like any social norm situation, I guess, right?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it, right? And I think that these communities are self-reinforcing, right? I think that if you are the kind of person who, you know, wants to be able to card everyone, including your own countrymen, you're probably not going to associate yourself with that group. But what we see are these, you know, these group manifestos kind of being being built, where you know you kind of you're building your own subset of an online community.
So are these communities, is it an amplification of the kinds of things you see in the real world? Is it a distillation of the kinds of things you see in the real world? Or does it pretty much parallel, you know, the way we all think about our nations and our groups and our, even, you know, our groups of friends, our cities, our neighborhoods, our high schools?
I think that in the same way that we see in the real world different manifestations of patriotism and when that crosses into nationalism, I think that you see that, right? On one end, you have someone who, you know, doesn't identify themselves in any particular way online, and then maybe you have, you know, your country's flag as your profile picture, or maybe you have a username that's in a different language or, you know, has some patriotic undertones. And I think that's the spectrum, right, of then you move over to, you know, someone who's going to say, I'm not going to card my own people, or I'm not going to buy and sell to them. And then I think you have, you know, maybe on the farthest end of the spectrum, people who want to actively work to, you know, advance the goals of their country and want to work in that space, right? And so I think these are the same behaviors that we see offline. It's just that they're manifesting themselves. The same spectrum is manifesting itself in the online community as well.
All right. Emily Wilson, thanks for joining us.
Don't struggle to align your organization's cybersecurity with business risk. Get the only solution that goes beyond reacting to threats with vulnerability and risk monitoring. You need the next evolution of MDR, and only Critical Start delivers it. Critical Start doesn't just monitor and respond to threats. They put you in control by detecting suspicious activities, quickly responding to contain threats, and identifying your most critical assets and protecting them against vulnerabilities and exposures. With continuous visibility, expert guidance, and measurable risk reduction, Critical Start has redefined what it means to manage cyber risk. Demonstrate provable security maturity to your leadership while positioning your program to achieve the greatest risk reduction per dollar spent. Stop fearing risk and start managing it with Critical Start. Visit CriticalStart.com and request a demo today. That's CriticalStart.com.
And that's the CyberWire. We are proudly produced in Maryland by our talented team of editors and producers. I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening.